The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome back to another rousing rendition of the UAB Director's Chair. He is the UAB Athletic Director. He is Mark Ingram. Mark, what's going on, brother? Is everything good?
Hey, man. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Going to get into some coaching changes, or actually coaching fire coming up here. We're also going to be getting into our top four piano solos. I don't think I've ever done, and I've done a lot of lists on this radio station the last 4 years, but I've never done anything about piano players, so I'm really excited.
How about that?
I know. I'm really excited because I know you're kind of into the hair bands and stuff like that, and I wouldn't even be able to tell you if there's any piano solos in that stuff. I will tell you that every one of my piano solos is before 1973, though, which is kind of worrisome, which is a little worrisome to me. I don't have Alicia Keys in there anywhere or any Elton John. So yeah. We'll get into that, your honorable mentions as well. But first thing, welcome back to the show. You can hear the show at least 5 times a week on the TKR app. And now we've made it even easier to find our app because it is now TKR on both Apple and Android. It used to be Tony Curry Radio on the other. Now just look TKR up on both. You can also check out our QR code, which is available on our website and whatever we send out social media. And of course, the Tony Curry Radio podcast, which means you can listen to the show as many times as you like. And we'd love that. Tony Curry Radio podcast. Check us out and listen to the UAB Director's Chair. Before we get into this coach, Pat Fitz story here, I do want to ask you about the annual Fan Fest coming up August 5th. Can you give us some details?
Yeah, you know, it's part of our rollout into the American Athletic Conference. We thought it would be a great opportunity to do a couple of things. One, get our folks together to celebrate that as we got closer to the season. You know, doing that on July the 1st felt, I don't know, like it could be, you'd hate to do something like that and it be unsuccessful. But yes. So, you know, doing that on, like, call it Saturday of a holiday weekend, Saturday in the summer, but particularly Saturday of a holiday weekend, we just didn't think made a lot of sense. So we thought, okay, let's get into football season, not the season, but after football practice has started, our two soccer teams and volleyball team will also be practicing. Well, you know, students will be more around, a little bit more alive around campus, and just a couple of weeks before kickoff. And so that's what we made the decision to do. So we're inviting people to come over and join us here on campus. We hope that they'll do that. And I hope they'll participate with us. I think it'll be a lot of fun. You know, get to meet players. And we also have a new coaching staff, so it gives people an opportunity to mingle with them a little bit. And I think it'll be a ton of fun.
Football season right around the corner will be happening exactly 3 weeks from that August 5th date here on August 26th. That Saturday, then, of course, UAB kicks off their season down at Protective Stadium coming up on that Thursday night, August 31st. So looking forward to that as well. All right, so we do have a lot of college football news going on, and I love this time of the year because it is kind of laying in the weeds right now. You know, some good stuff's going to be coming out over the next couple of weeks. This not necessarily a good story. You and I spoke briefly about this before we actually came on to do the UAB Director's Chair, but Coach Pat Fitzgerald, a guy who was with Northwestern for 26 years. He was a Northwestern guy. He was there 17 years as a head coach, 5-1 in bowl games, one of those as a player, 4 10-win seasons, 3 of those as a coach, 1 of those as a player. He was 110-101, which does not sound very impressive, but at Northwestern, that's incredibly impressive. And of course, he gets let go after originally being given a 2-week suspension because of a hazing incident or incidents on his football team. And then it never fails. It's like before they pull the covers back, they give you the suspension. Then somebody steps up and says, here's exactly what happened. It reminds me of the Bobby Huggins DUI that he had at Cincinnati. You know, they suspended him for 3 games and then the video came out. And then when you saw him puking on the side of the road, he got fired for it. What was your initial thoughts on this story? Then I want to get a little more in depth with you.
Yeah, you know, I always want to be careful not to speak about something I don't know enough about. And I only know what, you know, the rest of the public has read. So and then the last thing I would want to do is try to, you know, give my opinion about have they specifically done it right or wrong. So I don't want to, you know, I want to be very careful not to cast disparaging comments on my peers in any way. So my comments here, but you know, Pat, as you said, Pat played there. Clearly loves Northwestern. I played against Pat. I've met him before. He seems like a good guy. I don't know. And I don't know anything about what, you know, the detail of what is being alleged. from the player or players, however many there are, about what happened hazing wise. Hazing's an interesting thing, and there's a real thin line on it. You know, when I showed up to college my first day or two, all the seniors shaved our heads.
Yeah.
And I didn't care. I mean, really, you know, I can remember being at one point, there were some of my freshman teammates who were trying to hide and run away and not get caught. They're not going to get me, you know, that kind of thing. And I remember actually being like, no, and as far as solidarity, I don't want to be the guy that didn't, you know, I'm going to go do it, you know? So I basically voluntarily gave myself up for it. And, you know, did I look like an idiot for a month or so? Yeah, I did, but you know, whatever. But, you know, some people, you know, it really bothers some people. And you say, well, that's basically harmless. You know, they do it in the military. You know, the first day you go to a military academy, you either show up with your head shaved or they're going to do it for you. Yeah. And so is that hazing or not hazing? And then there's other things that are really harmful and dangerous. And you hear, you know, whether it involves alcohol or, you know, people being kind of beaten up in the dark, or there's all sorts of ritualistic things you hear about, whether it's through fraternities or sports teams. And so not to say that any of it's okay, but only to point out that it's complex. And there's a difference between, hey, rookie, carry my helmet out to practice.
Yeah.
And some of this other stuff. And there's a line, and it's hard sometimes to figure out where is that line. And, you know, I know Derek Gregg, their athletic director. He was the AD at Tulsa years ago, and then he worked for the national office. Derek's a great guy. And his CFO, Kevin Clark, and I worked together at Temple. I would assume, you know, that they and their leadership investigated this to come to this conclusion. I think what's also difficult in these cases is how can I put this, Tony? You know, not everyone, I've said this on the show and on a different subject before, not everyone who leaves us, and when I say us, I'm talking about everybody, every university, mm-hmm. every athletic mm-hmm. department, not every student athlete that leaves us leaves happy.
Yeah.
They don't all get to start. They don't all, in some cases, even get to play. They certainly don't all become all-conference or all-American or player of the year. They don't all win a championship. But they were all recruited by a coach who believed they could play, start, and do those things.
Yep.
And so they may, if they are one of those student athletes who leaves and didn't play or didn't play very much, it didn't go the way they envisioned it, then when you do an exit interview, they're probably not going to hold back.
Yeah.
And it's going to become, you know, a lot of things that you didn't think were an issue that the starter, the all-conference player will say, man, it wasn't that bad. I never saw that. And so then you find yourself trying to dissect, okay, did this happen or is it sour grapes? Are they just disgruntled because they didn't play as much, or is this a real serious thing? And you want to treat it seriously no matter what the, you know, if you get some kind of concerning allegation, you're going to treat it seriously, but you do have to ask that question.
And I know you're not saying that is a situation at Northwestern.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that's one of the things that makes it hard.
Yeah, and I think there's you said a fine line. I think you're spot on. There's a real fine line between doing something that is considered a rite of passage that is fun. Maybe it's embarrassing. I know a lot of guys make other guys sing karaoke.
Yeah.
And then there's other things that, quite frankly, are traumatic and mentally and physically damaging
right.
to someone's well-being. And I think
right.
you know, we can go back to a few Good Men. We can go back to Animal House, which was hilarious,
yeah.
but it was a movie. And you know, I worked with Alan Jay, and Jay, because of Jay's beliefs, his Christianity, they left him alone. He's like, they wanted me to do some things, but they left him alone. Now, Aldo Greco would tell the story about there was going to be a night during his freshman year where they would wake him up, strip him down, and make him run down the dorm naked while they hit him with bags of nickels. And
ooh.
He missed practice the next day because he was so sore. He got bruised. And he told that story hey. On air. But once you get through it, then it is that rite of passage. And then you're of the belief, I made it. I'm part of the group now. I'm now accepted. and you see nothing wrong with doing it to someone else because you've already gone to the other side. But if you're a person that does not want that to happen, right, and it is traumatizing, then and we would argue about it, because growing up, we're always told, do not succumb to peer pressure. Be who you want to be. Be your own man, and don't do anything. Don't do anything, whether it's drinking, walking naked, you know, gang banging, whatever it is. Don't do anything that is outside your belief system in order to be accepted. And this is driving me crazy. I didn't play ball at any level. I know you did. This drives me absolutely crazy, because about every 2 years, we hear another one of these crazy stories about guys with broomsticks being naked. And I'm like, what are we doing? And I just can't believe it gets that far. And you're talking at Northwestern. This is not Arizona State, nothing against Arizona State or North Carolina or any other school where the jocularity is. These kids are smart. It's hard to get into Northwestern. This is the Duke. This is the Vanderbilt. This is the Harvard. And to think that these kids are doing this, it just blows my mind. Am I missing something?
Well, and I think that you hit on something a second ago. Like, okay, so if I have to go through this hazing ritual this year, whatever the this is, it does seem like, for whatever unusual reason, it's human nature to be like, next year when I'm on the other side, I'm going to get back. You know, I'm sort of going to redeem myself. I'm going to take my frustration out on the next guy. So next year it's going to be even worse. You know, I had it bad. I'm going to make it even worse for the next guy. And, again, I'm not saying that that's okay. But I think that's where sometimes this comes from, is it was something at one point that was, let's do karaoke, and next thing you know, it's gone completely out of control. And probably everybody there says, wow, this got out of control. How did we get here? You know, how did this become this? You know, again, not speaking about Northwestern, because I just don't know, but just on the topic of hazing, it's a little bit like, you know, we have 450 student athletes here at UAB. I can't have someone monitoring all of their, you know, daily life outside of here and their activities and who they spend time with and what do they do at night and on the weekends. You just cannot do that. All you can do is constantly educate them on what's okay, what's not okay, and protecting themselves, being smart, making good decisions. And even still, things happen. And, I'm not trying to exonerate anyone here or create an excuse, because I do not know enough about what happened. But just on that subject, it is difficult.
Let me follow up. Mark Ingram, the UAB athletic director, joins us every single week here on TKR on Tony Curry Radio. You can hear 5 days a week. And also, of course, wherever you get your podcast, Tony Curry Radio podcast. It's Curry with a K, K-U-R-R-E, the UAB director's chair. So, you're right. There are 450 student athletes. There are 120 on a college football team. And I know some coaches are hands-on. It depends on what level they're at. Then you look at, say, a Joe Paterno, and I don't think Joe even showed up at the office the last few years. And obviously, we saw what happened with him. Bobby Bowden the same way. I mean, if you get the head coach showing up in your living room to recruit, it's just an amazing thing these days, because it just doesn't happen. That's why you have associate coaches and you have assistant coaches to handle their groups. Unless Coach Pat Fitzgerald was knowingly open to what was going on from this hazing situation and was egging it on, or acknowledged the fact that he knew it was going on and didn't say anything about it, which is really difficult for me to understand. I couldn't understand that, because he's got to know something. Is it the coach's responsible? And I know the buck's got to stop somewhere, and I know it usually stops at the top. But if you want to make that argument, it also goes the athletic director, and you're one of those.
Yeah,
this affects you too. And it sounds like maybe the athletic director kind of got out in front of it first and, you know, nipped it in the bud before it got to him. You know, and then, you know, we talked off the air a little bit too. He was 1-8 in conference play and 1-11 last year. And I'm wondering if maybe Northwestern was just looking for a straw to break that camel's back. But where does it stop? I mean, if Coach knew something like this was going on and said something to his players, wouldn't he still be reprimanded for it?
You know,
or would you reprimand your coach for it? Let me ask you that question.
Well, I think that if any coach learns of something that they don't think is right, then they ought to report it up. And then let's discuss the right way to handle this.
Yeah.
So that it doesn't happen again. You just get to a point where, again, how much did the coach know? Well, coach knew we did this. Well, coach knew that you guys all every year on July 4th weekend got together to hang out. That's what coach knew. Did coach know that some people who are of age were consuming alcohol? Well, they're of age. They're, you know, going to do what of age people do on their own time. Okay, maybe he knew that they did that, but it's not an official function. And then, but you know, you just get into where, what did they know, right? And you can see where a person would say, well, he knew. Well, no, he knew you were there. He knew y'all had this party, or he knew y'all went, all went to the cabin in the woods, or y'all went to the, you know, whatever, you know, this particular restaurant, bar, whatever, to hang out, to watch the baseball game, you know. And but do you know what happens after? Do you know all the detail? Maybe you do, but maybe not. But the point is, if you learn about that, you got to report it, and then we handle it from there. And it's about when you find out, well, they did know, or they've known for this long, and they really didn't address it, or they didn't tell anybody else. And again, I don't know how it's all gone down there at Northwestern. It's sad, you know. You don't want to see that happen to anybody. Whether it's, and what I mean is, you don't want to see things happen to the student athlete. You don't want people to feel humiliated, and you know, you don't want this to happen to a coach who and their staff, who I think otherwise has a, best I know, a pretty great reputation.
Yeah.
So it is a complex and difficult situation for all involved, no question.
And for a lot of programs out there, and I know we bring this up, there are a lot of programs that are doing it right. And so if you're wanting to get into college football or go to UAB or whatever, know that it's not always like that everywhere. 10-year, $40 million deal he signed just 2 years ago, and obviously he wants his money. And I think that's going to be our next big sticking point, because I don't think Coach Pat's going to be getting a job in college football anytime soon. Which is unfortunate for a lot of people who really liked this coaching style, and he was good for Northwestern football. So very well said there. Mark Ingram, the UAB athletic director, UABsports.com. You go to the website and you're going to see a brand new welcome to the AAC banner on there, which is super cool. And you can go ahead and you can click where you just don't want to see it again, but I want to see it every time I go to the website. So I left it up again. All right. Let's do some rock and roll, man. Every single week we do some type of theme, some type of list. It was my turn to come up with a list, and I heard a song, which is one of my top four, while I was driving down the road. I texted you about a week ago and I said, man, let's do the best piano solos in rock and roll. And I always open it up. It can be rock and roll. It can be really anything. If it moves you, if it shakes you, then certainly put it in your top four. But this was probably the one I had to do the most intensive research on, because when you think of piano solos, they don't just pop out of the top of your head like guitar solos do. You actually have to listen to the song and go, ooh, that's really good. So I'm sure you have some honorable mentions. You want to give me a couple of those and give me your first one?
Yeah, you know, I kind of felt like I had to kick out Billy Joel and Elton John. You know, we've done that on some other folks before. We talked about guitarists, and you know, I had to kick out Eddie Van Halen because he's so wonderful. So I decided to kick those two guys out because I think they're so fantastic, and it would almost be difficult to pick their top four, you know, to do right. So I say that respectfully. They're not on the list only because they're above everybody on the list for me. So I also tried, and you and I did not specify this, I tried to keep this in the rock genre.
I did too,
to the best of my ability. So I thought that while I don't necessarily think that it's, you know, complex or whatever, you cannot deny the sound. The song, you know this song when you hear it, and that is the beginning of Home Sweet Home by Motley Crue. Tommy Lee, their drummer, when he plays that, if I played the first, you know, three bars of that, play the piano, you know what it is. Yeah. And I think that, so that's in my honorable mention group, and along with Jump from Eddie Van Halen, so their guitarist plays that, and also the song 1984 from the same album, which is really interesting. And part of what I thought made that band and him so great is they really introduced that, I thought, into the rock world, into that hair band kind of big rock music style, to to kind of blend that together in a unique way. So I'll stop there with those three honorable mentions.
All right, then give me your. Well, I'm going to give you my first one since you already mentioned it, but I'm going to go with Piano Man. You have to. I mean, it's called Piano Man. Yep. It was released November 2nd, 1973. Do you know how high that thing went up on the charts? By the way, you want to take a stab? It only went to number 25.
Yeah, right.
That's one of those songs that came out. A lot of people weren't really digging it. And then, of course, just it's been on every greatest hits album that Billy Joel's ever come out with. And the amazing thing is, and it's on the National Recording Registry up in Washington, D.C., the amazing thing about that particular song was when it originally came out, it was 5 minutes and 37 seconds long. This is 1973. Now, this is remember, this is the 70s, where most songs were 2.5 to 3 minutes long. And so they were trying to fit in. What radio tried to do is the more songs you could play, the better it was, because you were hitting more genres and you were getting more songs on per hour, right? And that's why that's why you talked up songs. That's why you hit ramps. You hit the post. So the Columbia record people heard the song for the first time and said, this is a hit. This is a great song, but it's too long. So they took two of his verses, his second and third verse, and they actually made it into one to cut it down to 4:30.
How about that?
And then another Columbia record producer came in and said, it's still too long. Could you imagine going into Billy Joel after he writes The Piano Man and saying, we love it, but it's just too long. And they eventually cut it down to the edited single version, which is only 3 minutes and 5 seconds long. They almost cut the song in half. And maybe that's why it didn't go any higher than number 25, because there's a great story in that song.
Yeah.
And if you take a story, I think of several Cats in the Cradle. I think of Lion Eyes from the Eagles. If you cut a verse out, it screws up the whole song. You cut out the story. I mean, you're ending the story too soon, or you're just cutting out one of the big parts. So maybe that's why it only went to number 25. But I'm going to go with Piano Man only because it's the Piano Man. The other thing is, it took him 7 minutes to write that song. He was in his limo. He came up with Sing Me a Song on the Piano Man. Obviously, it was based on a lot of his piano playing on the West Coast in L.A. and also in New York and some of these small, smoky places. And he wrote it right after he got off stage. And he said he was done in 7 minutes. He went in the studio and knocked it out the next day. So pretty amazing stuff there from Billy Joel. What is one of your fantastic piano solos? What's one of your best?
Yeah, so I'm going to stay with Van Halen and roll into my first one, which is in the Sammy Hagar era, the song Right Now.
Oh, yeah.
Song Right Now, which, again, Eddie Van Halen is playing that. It is, I wouldn't ordinarily, I love songs where there's a really strong start, you know, when it comes to, you know, high energy rock music. I like a really strong start, not a build up, you know, slow to fast. Not that I don't like that, but I mean, I really enjoy that. And you wouldn't think you could get that out of a piano, but the beginning of that song is very pure. It's not a synthesizer. It is a piano. And I love that tune. And it's, again, because he's such a great guitarist, it's so unexpected. And anyway, that's going to be my first one, Van Halen, Right Now.
These are our top four piano solos of all time. He is Mark Ingram, and he is kind enough, and I'm very gracious that he comes on every single week here for the UB Director's Chair. But we also get to talk some classic rock. It's great. I was thinking, and I heard this song on Tony Curry Radio just yesterday. I was taking a nice long walk. It came out in 1972, and I heard the beginning of it, and I thought, ooh, and I had to move one off and put this one in, just because, like you said, when I hear it, like Sweet Home Alabama, when you hear that first riff, you know exactly what you're listening to. It is Changes from David Bowie, from Hunky Dory, 1971. I just hear that piano right at the beginning. It was fantastic. A couple of interesting things about that song. Do you know who played piano on that song?
No, who was it?
That would be Rick Wakeman from Yes.
How about that?
He actually sang that song with Rick Wakeman doing the piano part on that song. And if you listen to that's one of the songs where, you know, a lot of songs like Right Now from Van Halen, if you take the piano out, the song's over. It's not good.
Oh, yeah.
You take the piano out of Changes, it's not Changes anymore. The other interesting thing is that's the first song that David Bowie actually played saxophone on. In that particular song. And after he played saxophone on that song, another cat named Lou Reed was writing this song called Walk on the Wild Side. And he said, hey, David, you played such a great sax. Would you mind playing saxophone on my song called Walk on the Wild Side? And he did. So that's my second piano song. What's your second one?
Okay, so you talked about the Piano Man being so long. Here's another one that's so long and I think is really pretty and and straight from a heavy metal, I don't know if heavy metal, but somewhere in that hair band heavy metal kind of genre. I love the song November Rain by Guns N' Roses, and Axl Rose, their lead singer, plays that, and it's a beautiful song, and it's incredibly long.
Yeah, it is.
and I'm sure they got the same thing from producers and record execs that say, you can't play this, it won't sell, you can't do it, and they said, we're doing it anyway, and it was a huge hit. It was a huge hit, and it had a massive music video. It was a huge production of him and Stephanie Seymour, the model, getting married, which they later were married. But is just kind of an interesting, interesting foreshadowing of his life there. But a great, great song, but beautifully played by Guns N' Roses.
All right. I love it. I love it. I've got my third one here that's not really a classic rock song, but I love his music nonetheless. And I love the song he plays when Chevy Chase is sitting in the attic in National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, when he's putting on all the garb and he's listening to some Ray Charles. I'm going Hit the Road, Jack, from 1961, baby. Yes. Won a Grammy with the record. Of course, was also heard in 1995's Grumpier Old Men, which I was a sucker for. A guy who hit the charts over 42 times. He hit the charts 45 times overall with 45 different singles. He wrote well over 200 songs. That song, of course, was written by Percy, but that is just a fantastic song, Hit the Road, Jack, and another one of the songs where whenever I hear it, I go, why don't we hear this song more often? And that thing is 62 years old. But he's also his own piano man. When you think about some great piano players, I think about Elton John. I think about Liberace. I think about Eddie Van Halen to an extent. I think about Ray Charles. I think about Ronnie Millsap. I think about some of the
Stevie Wonder.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I just think about some of the great piano players out there, and ironically enough, a lot of them are blind, which is kind of strange. I guess that's why you tickle those ivories. But yeah, I think it's fantastic, and I think it's great, and I'm going to go with Hit the Road, Jack. All right, what's your next
one? That's a great one. Yeah, and I didn't mention Ray Charles or Stevie Wonder because, I was trying to stay with that rock feel a little bit more so, but they're, you know, fabulous, and yeah, what gifts to the world those two people are, and Ronnie Millsap. I mean, these guys, they're blind. It's just amazing.
It really is.
Their feel for the instrument and the sound and how that all comes together, I think, is remarkable. Okay, so another one that was incredibly long, and their production folks, their record label, everybody said, don't do it. It isn't going to work. And they didn't care. And that's Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen.
Yes.
What a fantastic version, but the beginning of that song, where Freddie Mercury starts on the piano, and like the other ones we talked about, he starts that, you know immediately what it is, and all the fans and anybody that's ever heard that song immediately knows what it is, and it's super long, and when it ends, I wish it was still playing, you know. And what a great, great song. So that'd be my next one, Bohemian Rhapsody.
I love it. And by the way, speaking of Ronnie Millsap, Ronnie was good friends with Philip Maloof, who owned the Birmingham Fire. You remember the World League of American Football?
Is that right?
Yeah, and I used to actually do the PA. He was good friends with Eddie Money. He was good friends with Ronnie Millsap. Of course, they also own the Sacramento Kings. Now they own the Palms out in Las Vegas. He was the only guy that ever had a yellow Lamborghini that rode the streets of Birmingham, Alabama. Philip Maloof was. I actually dated his sister for a short period of time.
Dear.
Her name was Adrian, and I didn't date her, but she used me because she knew that if she used me well enough, I would talk about her football team on my radio show, and it worked. And it worked, by the way.
It worked.
They used to call her Peg Bundy because she had some big hair. Anywho, I digress. So Ronnie Millsap is going to be playing a post game concert. And it was kind of strange because when you think about the World League of American Football, you really don't think about someone like Ronnie Millsap. But because he was friends with Philip, he agreed to do it. And so I would buy these. I think I've told you I'd buy these CDs. I probably have over 500 CDs autographed by different artists. It was just my way of remembering those moments. And so I bought a CD, and I knew Ronnie was blind. And I asked him before he went on stage, and I brought him on stage at Legion Field. I said, would you mind signing an autograph? And he said, sure. And he was looking for me to hand him an album. And of course, you can hold an album and sign it. And he said, I've never signed something as small as a compact disc. And I said, he goes, no, that's fine. I'll sign it for you, but you're going to have to help me. And I said, okay. And he goes, if you would please place your right hand on top of my right hand so I know exactly where it's at, then I'll hold it with my left and I'll sign it for you. And so I actually traced his autograph with my hand on top of the compact disc. Now, if you look at Ronnie Millsap's autograph, it looks nothing like the one I have. So if you had a guy come in to authenticate this autograph, they'd probably go, there's no way it's Ronnie Millsap. But I know it's real because my hand was on top of his hand. So it's probably one of my top two or three compact disc or top two or three autographs I have, which was an amazing story. And just a super, super nice guy. I mean, just a wonderful guy.
What autographs to me, that's what I love about, I'm not a big autograph guy, but in the right framework, the autograph only reminds you of that great moment and that memory that you have. It's not about the autograph. It's the autograph kind of authenticates the story.
Yes.
You know, or creates that conversation where you can say, ooh, let me tell you about Ronnie Millsaps. What a great time. And so that's wonderful.
When my ex-wife had a booth up at the Brass Bear and she was wanting to get some money rolling, and we were raising some money for the Bright House Foundation, which is a foundation that we started for special needs individuals. And I said, well, I've got some autographs that I think would bring some pretty good money. The only autographs I let her sell were the ones that I didn't get firsthand. And those were autographs that were either given to me or, you know, I bought them, you know, I had them authenticated, made sure, and I had a Donald Trump autograph, some stuff like that. But anything that I got personally was something, and I would never sell it. And because it's worth more than it's ever, you know, I got an autograph of Stevie Ray Vaughan, and to me, it's priceless, and I'd never sell it. And on the market, it's probably worth about $150. It would break my heart for someone to only give me $150.
Yeah.
Or something like that. So, yeah. So, okay, my last one, and this is the song that I was listening to the other day, and I was taking a walk. By the way, if you want to lose some weight, I've been walking about 2 miles a day. How's your hip, by the way? Your knee and your hips?
Well, the old knee's getting a little straighter, so I'm starting to walk more normally. And
okay, good.
It's put me in a position, I think, where I can maybe start exercising a little bit, which would be nice.
So I started walking, and of course, I run a lot of shows on TKR, but I do play a ton of classic rock at the bottom of each hour, and I only play up-tempo music. So if you want to get out and cut some grass, or you want to go walk, or it's too hot, or you're just not... Just put TKR on, man. I promise you're going to start moving. And I've been walking 2 miles, and I just listen to the radio station. It's great. It helps my listenership. At the same time, I get to listen to some great classic rock and roll. And I heard this song written back in 1972 from a guy named J.J. Cale, who I've gotten an opportunity to meet, a fantastic blues artist. He actually, when he wrote Call Me the Breeze, it was one of the first songs ever that used a drum machine. Leonard Skinner, when they came out with their version from Second Helping in 1974, actually had the drum set and did it. But Billy Powell played the piano on Call Me the Breeze. If you have not heard Call Me the Breeze in a while, that song goes for about 6 minutes. It is nonstop. It just goes. It just moves. It's fantastic. It's one of my favorite songs. And there is a piano solo in that thing that just absolutely kills. It's one of my favorite piano solos of all time, but I'm going to go with Call Me the Breeze, the Leonard Skinner version from 1974, Second Helping.
How about that?
How about
that's
that?
That's a great one.
Thank you.
All right, I'm going to hit you with my last one.
Okay.
You know, I like to go a little, try to mix it up, try to throw you off a little bit.
I know you do.
So going back to really when rock and roll began, when it became a thing altogether, this guy was a great pioneer, particularly with that instrument and his sort of wild antics and the way that he sang. And that's Jerry Lee Lewis, man.
Oh,
great
yeah.
Balls of Fire.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how you can't have that one in there. And he was just outlandish, you know, for his time, for that era, the way he acted. You know, everybody, you know, would say that he was, you know, he's crazy and all these things. And but it was just high energy, really fast, and just took this instrument, the piano, which historically had been for mostly classical music and, you know, just really beautiful melodic tunes. And all of a sudden he's just hammering on that thing, right? And he's kicking it with his feet and his heel. And, you know, we talked about Stevie Wonder, you know, think about how Little Richard was, same era, just how they would just hammer the keys of the piano and make sound come out, and just nobody had ever seen it before. You know, nobody had ever seen people play like that before. And, So that's going to be my last one to wrap it up is old Jerry Lee Lewis.
I love that.
Great balls of fire.
I was just up on Beale Street just several months ago watching the Memphis Grizzlies take on the L.A. Lakers and went right by his bar. And it's right there on Beale Street. It's amazing. Hey, great stuff, man. You get to pick for next week. And
all right.
Before we'll be 1 week closer to college football, we're going to be just on the outside of about 30 days, man. So I cannot wait for that. I know we're going to try to get Trent Dilfer on our radio station. I'm going to be singing a national anthem at a home game this year, right?
We're talking about it. We're still talking about that.
I'm working on my rendition of it. I promise I will give you a rendition within the next couple of weeks so you can listen to it and know that I'm for real. It's a bucket list, and I could think of no better place than to do it than a UAB football game. So I'll be honored to do that. All right, brother. Hey, take care of yourself. Call me if you need anything, and I appreciate you.
All right, man. Have a good week.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.